This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. My next guest is Cliff Leaf, who has written a book called The Truth in Small Doses, but it's the subtitle that gets my attention. The subtitle is Why We're Losing the War on Cancer and How to Win It. Cliff knows a little bit about this because he is a cancer survivor. He's also a journalist who's worked for Smart Money magazine and Fortune and the New York Times op-ed page. Cliff, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks, Paul. Great to have you.
I didn't know that we were losing the war on cancer. I thought we were making progress.
Yeah, so did I. When I started reporting about this 9 years ago, I thought we were winning, too. And then, you know, I started to do a little reporting and found that the rhetoric wasn't really jibing with what I called the financial statements, which is how many people were getting the disease, how many were dying of it, how much we were spending on treatment, et cetera.
Is it a money problem?
You know, like, I think most things are money problems when it comes right down to it. But I don't think that the problem is, say, an individual driving greed. I think that the money goes into the systems. And so the money is really badly misspent, and the money influences behavior in a way that's probably not the best way to use our talents.
But I'm asking, I guess, if there's enough money coming from the top down. I don't know if we're talking necessarily about government money or institutional money. But is there a lack of it that's keeping the research from getting done?
You know, that's what the common perception is. Oh, if we just get more money, we'll throw it into more research, and then we'll have our cures or reductions in the disease. I don't think that's the case at all. In fact, you know, through 9 years of reporting, it seems like the $16 billion or so that we have a year in public and private funds is just being badly misspent. I don't think more money by itself is going to get us any closer to a cure.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me, in looking through your book, like there isn't any one thing that's going to get us closer to a cure. But tell us some things that fulfill the part of your title, the how to win it part.
Sure. Well, I think a lot of this is just changing the systems. You know, as I frame it in the book, it's really not so much a science problem as it is an engineering problem. You know, we have to recognize the challenges that are before us and figure out very constructive ways to meet them. And some of them are very simple, like, you know, common platforms for sharing tumor specimens, for example, which is something that we don't have, or common, you know, data files for reagents or for, you know, for testing, you know, certain proteins that are known to cause cancer. So that kind of thing, we really have to do a better job of having common systems.
When you talk about common systems and common files, I think I hear you saying doctors who are doing research aren't sharing.
Yes. Paul, that's absolutely right.
Do we have to send them back to kindergarten?
Yeah, it's very much like kindergarten. You know, I mean, everybody has their good reasons for not sharing. They're afraid that, you know, someone will contaminate their specimens, or they really want to get this paper published, and so they sort of hoard data. There's all sorts of reasons why they don't share. But the incentives, you know, nobody wants to be the middle author on a big paper in a big journal. They all want to be the first author. And so there's a lot of pressure individually to succeed, and that makes it hard to collaborate.
Yeah, I would also think that there's got to be enough people who are doing this for a living who want to be the man or the woman who cured cancer.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and again, I don't think there'll ever be one cure. Maybe there'll be lots of improvements to treatments over time. The fundamental problem why we're losing also has to do with our strategy. We're just coming at this too late. So we really have to start preventing cancers and before we're really going to ultimately, you know, reduce the burden of this disease.
Well, in terms of preventing it, Cliff, you know, we have seen a dramatic drop-off in the number of people who smoke cigarettes. So all the anti-tobacco advocacy groups of the last quarter of a century have been successful. You have smoke-free workplaces and all over the country now. So we have fewer people smoking. That's got to be causing less lung cancer.
It is indeed. It just takes a long time to see those reductions because the disease, lung cancer, just takes so many years and sometimes decades to evolve into a clinical cancer. So a lot of that smoking, you know, the reductions that we're seeing will pay off over time, absolutely. And it's one of the great victories that we have had is this sort of citizen, you know, warriors who are getting people to stop smoking. So we should give credit where credit's due, and that's one.
Is it also possible that the reason we're seeing a rise in other cancers is because we're getting better at diagnosing them?
Yes, that is part of the issue. But we've gotten better over a long period of time. So we're seeing a very large number of new cancer cases since 1970. Three times more people. I'm sorry, the rate of growth of cancer cases has gone three times faster than the rise in population. Three times. That's pretty extraordinary. There are going to be 1.7 million Americans diagnosed with cancer this year. You know, even when I wrote my story in Fortune in 2004, the number was 1.3 or 4 million people. So it's gone up just 200,000, 300,000 people in just the past 9 years.
You know, Cliff, there's been some controversy over groups like the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure, with their pink washing and bringing attention to breast cancer, but at the same time, some allegations about things that the people think that they have done wrong, and they have become one of the groups at the center of the controversy over where the dollars are going and where the emphasis is going. Do you think that groups like that are good or bad for the fight on cancer?
Well, I have to say, full disclosure, you know, I sat on the board of directors for the Komen Foundation for 3 years. Now, long before we had this latest controversies, this was a number of years ago, but I got to know many people who are in that fight, and the volunteers are wonderful people, and I think overall, all of these goods, to some extent, are good because they call attention to the fact that we are nowhere near victory in this disease. And so I think the activism is important. I think one of the challenges we've got to is to get these citizen warriors to start agitating for change in the systems and not just raising money. And that's, I think, across the board, we'll see some effect in time. One group called Livestrong does a great job of changing systems. The woman, Kathy Giusti, who runs the Multiple Myeloma Research Foundation, is an unbelievably brilliant and innovative woman who is changing the game in multiple myeloma. So there are great people doing great things as volunteers.
You mentioned Livestrong. They certainly have been hurt by the Lance Armstrong connection.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think Doug Ullman, who runs the foundation, is just one of those great, great brains. You know, he's just always looking for new ways to make sure that there's more bang for the buck in research dollars. So I'm a big fan of that group. I'm a big fan of the MMRF, the Multiple Myeloma Research Foundation. I'm a fan of little tiny groups. There's one group called the Prostate Net, run by a guy named Virgil Simons, who has done very, very creative things with almost no money. So there are people out there doing great work, and you know, I would hate to have them suffer because of some bad press for a few groups. But you know, I think that the more fundamental barriers are at the sort of national level, at the National Cancer Institute and the academic institutions, where so much of this research is being wasted, I think, on petty rivalries.
What about big pharma, the large pharmaceutical companies?
Yeah, well, I think that there's some progress in terms of the innovations that you see at drug companies, but mostly the systems encourage them to get the littlest incremental benefit. So, you know, I mean, if you can get a drug approved, you know, that keeps someone alive longer for 2 weeks, and that's a real example. You know, you can make millions or billions of dollars on that drug. You know, there's no incentive to really have a larger effect. And so we have to change the way our whole drug development system works. And I spent a lot of time in the book talking about the sort of strange incentives to have almost no benefit from a drug.
I've only got 30 seconds left here, Cliff, but what's the reaction been to the people who are in the cancer research community to your book?
Well, it's funny. So far, it's been really supportive. I've just got a couple of emails today from cancer researchers and from some advocates. I think so far it's been really, really supportive. You know, when I wrote the story in 2004, I thought there would be huge blowback, but instead I got a bunch of invitations from the cancer community to talk more about these issues. So I'm encouraged.
I hope that some of the people who read it, who are in that industry, will take some of your suggestions to heart and maybe inch us a little bit closer. I don't think we're going to take giant leaps anytime soon, but if we do it inch by inch, eventually we hope to get there. It's a terrific read. It's called The Truth in Small Doses, Why We're Losing the War on Cancer and How to Win It, written by Clifton Leaf. Cliff, thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Paul. Real pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This show is called America Weekend. We're on the air every Saturday and Sunday from the Envision Radio Networks, and we're on Facebook and Twitter, too. Thanks so much for listening. America Weekend.